episode 59. In today's episode, I sit down with Lyndon and Martin from JPS Education, based out of Melbourne, Australia. I've had Lyndon on the podcast before. This is the first time for Martin. Martin is someone who I hold a lot of respect for in this space. Both these guys are incredible educators and guys who think through things, which, as you guys know, is something that I value a lot. JPS is one of the world's top education companies within the fitness space, and Lyndon and Martin act as the manager of education services and education coordinator, respectively, which is no small feat with the caliber of information these guys produce. We have a lengthy, nuanced discussion over the pros and cons of imposter syndrome. We touch on a few other notable topics, but the main theme here is around the nuances within this rather hazy topic. This is part one of two. And as always, if you enjoyed the episode and would like to support the podcast, I would ask for you to please head over to iTunes or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast these days and leave it a five-star review. This goes a long way and really, really does help things out. And I love reading through them. So thank you to those who have done it. And thank you to those who will do it in the future. If you can tell a friend about the podcast, that also helps us grow and keep going. And if you're here from Instagram, what's up? Thank you so much for hopping on platforms and joining us here. And if you can, or if you do, share a screenshot of the podcast on your story. Be sure to tag me at Austin Current, and be sure to tag our guests at Mr. Fitness, that is Martin, and at LJ Purcell, which is Lyndon. Enjoy the conversation. Right on. Today's main topic that I kind of wanted to discuss was education. I don't really have intros for these, but I really just want to talk about education. So you both are people. JPS in and of itself is an interesting thing to observe from afar, right? So it kind of started out, be it with Sam and Jacob, and then kind of just has blossomed, right? Like into this world renowned thing. And it has, and it's cool to observe that. And Lyndon, I kind of want you guys to kind of be able to tell, I mean, you don't have to tell the entirety of the story, obviously, because that could take, depending on the detail, that could take a while. But, you know, Martin, I remember us sitting together next to each other at the Minnow seminar back in 2017.
That's right.
And I remember you were kind of going through your first prep. If that was
second
your first
prep,
one.
Second prep.
You were going through a prep, I'll say that.
Yeah.
And I remember that's, you know, you've always been someone that's just been so hungry. Like you can tell, like you're just so hungry for, I want to learn that. I want to learn everything I can. So hungry, it seems to sort of level up. And it's not level up in the sense of kind of like, I don't know, just from like a negative sense. I don't mean it that way at all. It's just a matter of like, you're always kind of hungry for that next leveling up, man. And in the sense of like, you know, being able to present next to these guys at this next hypertrophy summit thing, which is just super dope.
It's quite, obviously very grateful, but it's quite surreal to think that, you know, I am sitting or standing next to these guys. It's interesting. Keen to have a chat about it.
Yeah, man. I'd love to. So, Lyndon, we kind of discussed this, I think, last time, but did you guys both kind of join on around the same time, or kind of how did that all kind of unfold?
Well, yeah, we were in the same mentorship group. So Jacob used to conduct mentorship classes face to face. This is before it went online, and we were actually in the same group together, from what I remember.
Yeah, so we were probably at slightly different time points in our journey there. Like I was really sort of looking for that final sort of practical internship because I was coming into the last few months of my degree at that stage, and I was like, haven't quite got the job opportunity that I want in front of me. I did have opportunities there, but they just didn't quite. I guess I was very concerned about just like starting off on a track that I didn't want to be exactly in. And I recognize totally, like, early in your career, you've got to do some things, and then you want to try and move like both upwards while a little bit laterally. Like, you never start exactly where you want to start. But it was sort of this thing in my mind that I just wanted to work much more in general with sort of like the general public as opposed to athletes, and then much more with sort of body composition focused as opposed to like S&C outcomes. So I sort of was, I guess, entering the mentorship at that really like looking for sort of employment, ready to tie up just like the bow on my education package. So after that, after mentorship, I basically started as a coach at JPS instantly. And then Martin can probably, so I guess we started in the same mentorship. I came on board slightly earlier, but that's by no means, a credit to me. It was just that I was ready to sort of start, and Marto had his own good little setup somewhere else already. But I think overall, we both basically started there at a very similar time. Marto can probably speak more about his experience.
Yeah, so at that time, I had already been coaching for probably 2.5 years. And I remember being at the point where I was pretty lost with where I was taking my career. So I was, an everyday personal trainer at your commercial gym, Anytime Fitness. And I was pretty happy with how I was doing financially, but I just wasn't progressing as an actual coach. And it took me, going to JPS and being introduced to, Jacob and Lyndon and all the other guys at JPS was what I needed to kind of come to the realization that, I haven't really progressed as much as I wanted to as a coach over the past 2 or so years. And that's when I started to realize that experience doesn't necessarily equal expertise. Like, really, experience is just racking up hours, and it's what you do with those hours that counts. And I came to the realization that, the past 2 years I had gotten better as a coach, but I probably should have been progressing at a greater rate, so to speak. And being introduced to, everything that JPS was teaching throughout that mentorship really like opened my eyes and broadened my horizons. And at that time, I was also at university doing my bachelor's degree in exercise science, and I had a fair, knowledge base. Like, I knew things, knew how things work, but I only kind of knew answers to questions, and I couldn't really use those answers and use them in different contexts and kind of elaborate on them. Like, it was really like a one-way road in my head. And JPS is really what like opened that up for me, because I started to, realize the importance of science and respect the importance of science and how we can use science and integrate that into practice, because it hadn't really been anything that I was doing with my clients in the past. Science was something that I was never really very familiar with, even though I was going to university. I felt like at university I was just being handed information, was told to learn that information, and then all I had to do was like pass an exam, essentially like a memory test. So it's interesting, like, I was studying an exercise science degree, but I didn't really respect science to the degree that I do now. So, yeah, I think that was, the first real eye-opener from JPS was, science is this thing that we can use to inform our decisions. And essentially it's, science is reliable whether or not you believe in it. And that's what really hit me when I was introduced to JPS. And then that's what, you know, instigated my passion from learning, for learning. And then from then I did the mentorship. I spent a bit more time coaching at Anytime Fitness, and that's where I started to see the progression that I liked. And eventually, I got offered a job at JPS, and yeah, here we are now.
Yeah, it's a cool way to look at it. In terms of, I think one way I wanted to kind of move forward, and I think a good parallel. So I have a similar way of looking at things as far as like got into it. So I got into this kind of through competing in a way. We all kind of look for that endeavor after our sports ends, usually in high school if you don't decide to go anywhere else with the sport, you're kind of left with that, well, shit, what do I do from here sort of sense, right? And so for me, there was that pull towards, well, I'm just going to get a job at a gym. Well, I had the job at the gym in high school. And so I graduated, kept working at the gym. I actually went away to university for a year and experienced that. That was great. And then came back and got my job back at the gym that I was working at. And within that, it seemed as in that gap year, when I went off to university, it seems like that was the year Men's Physique was started. Like, it seems like that was just the male model search, whatever kind of the, what was it? Muscle and Fitness model search, like that Steve Cook, won and like kind of started, ignited this whole like sphere of Men's Physique. And so I got back from university at that point, got my job back at the gym, and basically there was guys there working at the gym that were training for this like physique show. And I had a good friend, and she was doing women's figure for the last couple of years. And she had won kind of the state, championships in the women's figure. And so she had some history with competing. And then I had some lifting buddies at the gym who kind of worked there with me that I was kind of like just training, like I knew how to train for sport, like S&C, but like, I didn't know how to train for physique. Like I was tried and true, like finding workouts on bodybuilding.com. I was just completely oblivious to the point of whatever's going on. Like the guys who I was working out with were like, "Hey man, we're doing this workout today." And I'm just like, "Yeah, sweet. I'm just here." And they kind of got me into the competing world, which then, I was studying exercise science in university, but I didn't know where the hell it was going, like most of us early on. And we all think we want to be physical therapists or work with athletes in the beginning. And then you figure out that that's one, a terrible job for the most part. and two, athletes don't have any money. So, and also most athletes don't really desire your help unless they're at a caliber where they actually, it's the ironic part where it's usually the athletes that get to a certain point that then they can afford help, that they have this weird relationship with no longer needing it. And then up until the point where they don't have any money for the help that they need or want or desire, they can't get it. And so it's this weird, like, you never quite get there sort of mentality. Anyways, that kind of turned me off to the whole thing. And so I kind of started to train clients at the gym and was again, similar to you guys, like in university at the time, trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And so this was when I got connected with, in my 40 gym down in Tampa, Florida. And at the time, like this was when it was kind of at its peak. And I spent the summer there. I interned there. I went through all their mentorship things, with the brilliant guys down there. And so similar to you guys, like I had this moment, I had this experience that was kind of just like, things just started to click. Things started to dawn. And I started to kind of create these cross bridges between what I was learning in university and what was being used and practiced in the real world. And how do I, now I can apply these things. there were so many things that I was just like, just because you know things. And this is kind of where I want to go with the first part of this conversation, at least, like how we start to integrate, you know, because I think there's a lot of folks who really love the accumulation of facts and figures because it makes you good at social media. But because the current reward system of our climate, our industry is like, okay, we'll make infographics. We'll come out with, you know, I'll be able to argue. I'll be able to debate you. I'll be able to be good at this platform. But that doesn't make a good coach. That doesn't make a good trainer. And that doesn't make a good educator, right? And so I basically want to start to, I want to kind of pick your guys' brains. Similarly, we have pretty similar stories, and the people we work with at this point are very, very similar. And so I kind of just want to talk about that importance of being able to take this information, and for those listening who are starting to accumulate this knowledge, they're starting to get into this, because I get a lot of messages asking sort of how to bridge these things because they're in university or they already graduated university. And unfortunately, they didn't have the experience of getting to go to JPS, a place like JPS. They didn't have the experience to get to go to a place like I had the opportunity at MI40, you know, which was my JPS at the time. And it wasn't until then that all of that stuff started to make sense. It started to being, you know, we were able to put things into practical application. We were able to make sense of the science and make the science work how it needed to work for us in those scenarios. So I guess what would how would you kind of start to answer that question or start to guide someone in that journey of how do we start to bridge those things together, and what are those first steps or ways of reframing how we're learning information in which we can now put it into practice and be a good coach, be a good trainer, and sort of really start to progress our careers in that way.
So I think something that really stands out to me, and something that I've probably, again, only come to the realization over the past couple of years, is that education, it should be seen as more of a process as opposed to just an answer. So like you mentioned, Austin, a lot of people are after the facts, the figures. And from my observations, a lot of students take up university degrees because they want to be smarter, right? They want information. So they take up a degree, and if they pay attention in class and they actually rock up, then they're probably going to walk out of uni being a little smarter. But like I mentioned earlier, in many cases, you know, university provides you with that information, but it doesn't really teach you how to link ideas, you know, how to connect dots, and then how to integrate that information in practice. And I think a lot of people get caught up with just trying to find answers to questions. That's exactly where I was, you know, a few years back. Now, the whole process thing will obviously require you to find and seek out answers to questions at some points, but it shouldn't be like the sole purpose of the journey. So the way I think about it now is when I'm acquiring information, I'm thinking about how this information is going to help like potentiate my learning in the long run. And I'm thinking about how I can actually apply it and use it in practice. And at the same time, I'm trying to link it with, you know, previous knowledge that I already have and my prior experiences. And this is something that I was unable to do a few years ago. Like, you know, if I had 50 students ask me a question a few years ago, I'd probably provide them all with the same answer, because that's the only thing that I'd know. I'd only know how to answer a question in one way. Whereas now I feel like I have the ability to integrate, you know, other areas of knowledge in my brain and tailor the answer to the person based on their like current level of knowledge, and based off what I know about the person in general. And usually when I'm working with students, I can get a good grasp of, you know, where they're at and try and tailor my answers to them. And the only reason I can do that is because, like I said, now I see education as more of a process. I'm not just worried about building my factual knowledge base. I'm worried about how, you know, the knowledge that I'm acquiring is going to help me in kind of all aspects of life and how it's going to help me potentiate my learning in the long run. So for example, you know, in the past, if I had a question, if I just didn't know something, all I do would be open a textbook, you know, read the text, read the paragraph that, you know, is relevant to what I wanted to know, and I try and memorize it. And that's how I, you know, build essentially a bank of answers in my head. But they all kind of sat in different storage boxes in my head and I just couldn't link them together. I couldn't really pull, you know, information out of one storage box and kind of use it in a different context. Whereas now, instead of, you know, just reaching for the textbook, I'll try and actually create a hypothesis, which is just like a proposed explanation of whatever it is I'm trying to learn. And I'm trying to create that hypothesis based on the information that I already have. So I'm trying to synthesize information in my head as opposed to just reaching for the textbook, you know, as my first point of call. That's what I'm trying to improve on at this point in time with my learning, is I'm trying to kind of synthesize information based on the knowledge I have. And then if there are gaps that I've identified, that's when I would reach for the textbook. So that's how, again, to kind of cap that off, that's the way I see learning now. And this is what I now promote to students. It's like I'm teaching them, I'm providing them with information, I'm telling them what they need to know, but I'm also explaining to them that there's no like one concrete answer for many things. And it's probably a good idea that you guys go out, do some more research on your own and try and come to your own conclusions about certain things, not just necessarily taking my word for it. Because, you know, in the past, what I would do is just listen to experts, listen to what they would say, and then essentially just, you know, take that information in, store it, and regurgitate it. So I'm trying now to help my students essentially learn from my mistakes and, you know, improve on their ability to learn and to view education as more of a process, a journey, as opposed to just, like you said, Austin, just building that factual database in their heads.
Yeah, I think you made lots of really good points there, Marto. And I would also say I really like your insights on this topic, Austin. I was listening to your conversation with Kyle and Luke on Kyle's podcast just yesterday. I haven't quite finished it all, but I thought you made some brilliant points in regards to the strategies people are employing when it comes to social media. And there is a distinct demographic of people forming that it is basically create the illusion of a coach, but specialize in basically just like infographics effectively. Like there is, I think it would be almost disheartening to find out how many people these people are actually coaching. It's just like you're posting more infographics a day than you are coaching people a day. And that's worrisome to a degree. Like there's the sort of the systems we operate in within the world is like, to a degree, we need to specialize in certain things. So I think social media educators is probably will be a sphere of professional in the future. But I think there is still a lot of probably misguided behavior around this currently. Like people think that is the way to become a go-to coach. And I think there needs to be a significant degree of reflection on just like the direction you want to head. Like there is danger in just seeking numbers of followers or just like things like that and thinking that is the metric for success, because you'll get there and realize now what, sort of a thing. That's sort of off the topic, but I did just want to highlight that I think your insights in this area are very valid, considering the like you have the the position to speak from authority on this. So I think people should be paying more attention to that. The thing I will say in regards to learning, I guess this is always one of those sort of meta projects of mine. Like, I'm consistently trying to learn and also learn about the learning process. I think the thing that's really has really begun to allow me to make a lot more of these sort of lateral connections previously. And this sort of ties in with something that, that Luke is quite big on, is having a hobby and just like something that's sort of completely unrelated, sort of in the specific local sense to what you're actually doing. But learning, I guess Luke speaks about it probably more in the sort of like detaching from work sense. But I think, I guess, a hobby or a secondary skill, like a musical instrument or something that you're trying to learn, is extremely beneficial for recognizing how you're conveying fitness information. And the thing that really made this apparent to me is this year I've started to learn like just how to write computer code. Like, that's, I was like, decided I want to learn that. Like, if I can't speak to people, I may as well learn to speak to computers.
Why not?
So, yeah, I was like, apparently those are the skills for the future, being able to interface with people and have EQ or have coding ability. So I was like, well, maybe it's coding for me.
You sound Alan Turing. Do you know who that is?
Oh, no, I don't know who that is. Sorry, Martin, can you please fill me in?
He's played by Benedict Cumberbatch, I think.
Ah, that's a fantastic movie, The Imitation Game.
Oh, isn't it?
Oh, it's so sad, though. Like, it's the guy was such a genius. Like, there's on that point, Turing obviously invented the Turing test. And Brian Kaplan invented a really cool one I forget what it's exactly called, but it's effectively the intellectual Turing test, where what you do is you say you write a for and against position on a statement. So say like you're pro-social justice or you're opposed to social justice, or, you know, politics is always a pretty easy one to create some divisiveness. But and then that's basically the test of like, are you actually for that position, or are you just, have you constructed such a good description of the position that no one can actually tell whether you're for or against social justice? Do you understand what I mean? Like, you write a piece supporting and opposing it, and people theoretically shouldn't be able to actually tell easily which position you are actually for.
A non-opinionated piece, essentially, yeah.
Yeah, I guess like it is a test of like how well you can actually represent the opposing side, because it's like the test of how much you're actually strawmanning the other position. Like, we all hold views, but unless you can actually accurately represent what the other side is saying and pass, say, the intellectual Turing test, then you're not actually very justified in holding the position that you hold.
Let's dive into that. That's important. We'll get back to what we were talking about. That's important to kind of discuss here, because I think a lot of people listening here can learn from this point being made, because we do this every single day, or at least we see this every single day on social media. We see this from either divisions of whatever we're talking about, right? Whatever divisiveness is caused through these conversations or lack of conversations. And we've said, I believe, in one of our conversations and many of the conversations I've had, is one of the best things you can do is to learn how to be a better listener. And I think you have to first listen to what that person is trying to say. Like, you have to first listen, and then second, you have to understand what they're trying to say. Listen to what they're saying and try to understand what they're trying to say. Because until you listen and understand what they're saying, you have no opportunity, you have no chance, no shot at actually giving it a fair fight. Because that's the conversation of, like, you can't fight stupid. Like, you can't fight irrational illogical people. Like you can't do it because it's constantly, they're not listening to what you're saying. It doesn't matter. It's the Trump of conversation, essentially. Like the man could literally say, anyone could say anything to him, but he's not listening. He's not going to understand what you're trying to say. He's going to say what he's going to say, regardless of what comes at him, essentially. Which is just interesting to observe in and of itself. But this is what happens on social, I believe, right? Like whether we're talking about diet culture, whether we're talking about, the current one, that's just, well, there's a lot of them, but whether it's diet and anti-diet culture, or it was keto, non-keto, what was it? What was the most recent? Well, between the vertical diet, like there's just so many, right? There's so many things that are pro and con. Like there's so many things that are, this is the thing and this is not the thing. And I think it's one of the most important things is to, again, first listen to who is speaking. And I think that's a mutual respect we all deserve in most instances. And then try your best to understand. And I think this is, a brilliant part of that. Obviously a brilliant man created that test, but like, that's a great lateral bridge to the fitness industry, because we have to, for like to under truly understand a topic, if you're going to oppose a topic, if I'm going to go in and I remember I had to do this in college, in my undergrad for global warming, how it was, pro global warming, like debating of like, I had a million graphs, I had everything, I had all my research done. And one of the best things I could have done in that debate was I also took the time to learn everything I could about the other side. And so basically there was nothing that person could say to surprise me in that instance, because I already understood the points at which we're against. I tried my best to understand both sides equally as much as I possibly could. Therefore, it could be a fair fight. It could be a fair conversation in which we could both sort of meet in the middle and actually have a conversation from the same place. Because I think we're all trying to have a conversation from different starting points. And it's exhausting because no one's in sync with where the starting point even is. And we're starting in different places, which is infuriating, and it gets us nowhere. So I think that's an important thing to kind of bring up, and just the importance of being able to do that before you just shout from the rooftops, calorie deficit and all everyone's problems go away. And it's the answer to all things, apparently, if you're in the fitness space and on social media. So, yeah, sorry, that was a tangent, but I see it every day, and it's so infuriating because you can observe it in the conversation. You can observe it in the thread. No one's taken the time to listen. No one's taken the time to understand where that person may come from. And if you truly want to help someone, and again, this goes back to clients, not just helping other fitness professionals understand what you're trying to say, but in the terms of a client, which is the most important, is if that client comes to you and they're, let's say they come to you, and this happens to me, like they come to you with a sort of a tribal mentality around a certain diet, a certain approach, right? It does them no justice for me to attack that to any degree. I need to have that conversation with them. Like, why is this? Why, one, where did this start? What's your education behind this? And how do you feel towards it? And then I need to listen to everything they're trying to say. And I need to do my best to then understand what they're talking about, why they came to this conclusion, why this is their belief. Because only then can we have the conversation of maybe this isn't the best route. So I wanted to point that out.
No, I wholeheartedly agree. And I think there is exorbitant amounts of this going on in the fitness industry. And I do wholeheartedly and completely share your frustration with this. I started, like, this is very much sort of front of mind for me as well, because not only is it something that I observe every day, but it's something I began writing a piece on recently, but just I just sort of never actually ended up putting it out because it just almost seemed so pointless just to make the case for fight, to stop arguing and fighting amongst yourselves. Like it's extremely salient to me that I remember like the first time instances like this occurred, it was just like seeing the breakdown of my parents' marriage, just like people talking past one another. And I was like, you know, not that I had an extremely expansive worldview then, but I remember it. I was just like, this is no way to sort of like live a life. And then all of a sudden it's sort of like you form these confirmation bias kind of worldviews, and all of a sudden you can see all the flaws and none of the features in another person. And that's exactly what goes on. And we separate ourselves into these echo chambers. And then I think a term that's extremely useful in this situation is something that Thomas Sowell calls shibboleths. So a shibboleth, for those listening at home, is basically a term that was used in sort of biblical times. It was it's a password, effectively, like, because, you know, when it was hard to tell whose side or whose tribe or someone or something someone was from, there would basically be a password that would be relatively easy for one tribe to say, but then extremely hard for the other tribe to mimic based on sort of linguistic or demographic sort of backgrounds and histories. It's like, you know, even if I could present myself like the most authentic looking, you know, Chinese person, there's just no way that I can pick up sort of like, you know, fluent, basically like Chinese passwords or anything like that at the drop of a hat. So shibboleths were basically these terms used to determine and signal which side you're on. And you see this, and Thomas Sowell pointed out to this in a political sense. You mentioned one, like climate change. He's just like, climate change has become this shibboleth, unfortunately, of like one side. And Thomas Sowell is actually relatively conservative and sort of opposed to the more drastic claims of climate change. But he's like, I'm not a climate change denier. He's just like, there's literally, you know, shells in the Sahara Desert. He's just like, no one is suggesting that climates don't change. So to call someone a climate change denier is like that, that's how we sort of have these words that actually begin to get detached from meaning. He's like, the argument is over how much the climate is changing, how much people are contributing to that, how much it's anthropically contributed to. And yeah, sorry, I guess that's all sort of slightly lateral to the point, but hopefully people can see the parallels that I'm getting at. It's like, we talk about gut health, we talk about calorie deficit, we talk about all these things, and they actually become detached from meaning, and it's a way to signal in-group, out-group. And one of the massive cognitive biases that we see when it comes to in-groups and out-groups is when you look at people within your in-group, you see the characteristics and features that make them individuals. But when you look at members of an out-group, we actually can conflate all the differences basically into a single thing. We see them all as basically the same. So, you know, I think this is something that whatever pocket of the fitness industry we are sitting in, because I think the term evidence-based fitness is even beginning to lose its meaning. We look at everyone outside of whatever pocket we perceive ourselves to be in and think they're all the same. And we think everyone within our pocket has nuanced views and different relevant insights. And that is extremely unlikely to be the way that reality has laid out the data of the world. Like I guess you guys can speak to that point, but I share your frustration, and I guess the final thing I'll say is this, sorry, is we have become like strict adherents to the narratives of the whatever, you know, sphere we are operating within. But unless you believe that sphere has the absolute capital T truth on some matter, then you do need to speak to other people outside of your echo chamber if you're going to. They might not possess the majority of the truth value on the matter, but if you recognize that your sphere does not contain the absolute capital T truth, then you need to acquire still some remaining truth value from people outside of your echo chamber. And I really think people are more so counting the amount of truth value they have than actually looking for acquiring more of it.
Yeah, I guess the first time this sort of concept became apparent to me, so I'll put a different kind of spin on it, was upon teaching and presenting information, I started to notice that just presenting facts, data, information didn't necessarily change people's minds if they did hold an opposing view, and especially an opposing view that was like a personal truth to them. So like you said earlier, Austin, when you were debating back in college, you know, you had all the facts, you had all the information, but you also then started to learn the opposing side as well. And that's something that I've now realized I probably need to do more of. And I am now less inclined to present, you know, a bunch of data and facts to someone who I know may hold an opposing view, because in many cases, you know, they will hold this personal truth, which is, you know, just to construct an idea in their head that they believe to be true, even in the face of contradicting evidence. And it's important to try and find other ways around that. And that's something that I've been working on, you know, with my teaching and my presenting over the past year, and especially upon reading a book about science communication. I remember reading about, you know, the fact that people's values and beliefs will just overshadow any opposing facts that you may present them with. So yeah, it's quite an interesting, I guess, topic. And over the years of my like teaching experience, I've definitely observed on numerous occasions, you know, that people I've spoken to haven't necessarily taken up the information that I've provided them with, potentially because I've just thrown them a lot of facts and haven't really provided them with like a background beforehand, or just probably haven't went about it the right way. So yeah, that's definitely something that I've been working on over the past like years.
I think going back, so I think to understand one, and Lyndon, I know I said this in that episode. I'm not sure if you got to that point yet, but I discussed the dehumanization we've sort of lived out through these social mediums, right? You know, so we don't see these people as people. We see them as a number on our homepage. We see them as a number. And it's not that necessarily that's, you know, intrinsically what we feel, but that's what they become, you know, because we're not always thinking back to like, if you look at your analytics and 100 people followed you, like we don't know those 100 people, you know, so they inevitably become this metric, you know. It's almost by proxy a product of the platform itself. Like it's not something, even if you're aware of it, it's not even something that you can consciously sort of work against. But you know, there are ways to kind of combat it and work against it, but they're very challenging and time consuming and take a lot of effort. And so you got to play out what's the opportunity cost here. But I think back to the point of displaying information, I think it's important to sort of almost understand that going in, right? So like Martin, like now that you say that and you present, it's important to know going in, if you have a room full of 50 people, or let's say 10 people, you have a room full of 10 people, let's say it's an intimate crowd, you can assume, unless you absolutely know everyone in there, you can assume a few things about the crowd, right? You can assume there's going to be at least one thing I'm going to say today that's going to challenge someone's views on a topic, right? So you can go in and understand that and try to, and I think one of the best things are something that I think we all get better at as we progress in educating other people is the sense of, where are the holes in this? Like, where are there going to be things that I know are going to raise an eyebrow or going to raise the blood pressure of someone in this room? Like, as soon as I say it, as soon as I present the facts, like, three meta-analysis have found this conclusive, that's going to then raise someone's blood pressure because they don't believe that, because they've had experience elsewhere, right? And I think it's helpful just to go into any situation, in any conversation, and you know, most of us are very familiar with this listening, like, you go into any conversation online, you go into any interaction online or any interaction in person, you know, I think we can all understand, like, people want to be listened to, they want to be heard, but first and foremost, people just want the truth. And unfortunately, there's a lot of different truths in this world. Like, it's very dependent, and it's very dependent on why you're asking. It's very dependent on the subject matter itself, the context of that subject matter, and what the end goal is of what you're asking me, because I could give you five different answers there. And it's going to get you closer to that truth you're seeking. But someone is always going to have that concept of their truth in their head. And so I think it's just very, very helpful in any conversation, right? Speaking as individuals here, just like we're in, you know, us having a conversation about it, but speaking to those listening, like, in any room you find yourself in any conversation you find yourself in, you have to go in understanding that, you know, especially in very decisive times, I mean, people are, we're more and more split by the day, it seems. And it's not just in the fitness space, it's worldwide. It's politically, it's in the media, it's everywhere. And I think it's important to learn how to communicate in a more helpful way. And I think a more level-headed way. And to assume the best from that person in the fact that they're just trying to also seek the truth. And to understand, again, going back, to understand that at any one point, you're going to say something that's going to raise their blood pressure, whether that's subconscious or conscious, right? And I think one of the most helpful things that I did was go, like, in my life, in my career so far, that opportunity that was to get out of my sphere, Lyndon, as you spoke to that, I got out of my group. That's when I went down to MI40. I got out of the academic sphere. I got out of the academic space. Those guys were brilliant, and they still are brilliant, but they're outside the norm of what is constituted as, like, let's say, the evidence-based space. I would say they're very science-driven, but they're out of the realm of the evidence-based space.
Yeah, they're science-driven, but not science-limited. And I think that, for some reason, that has become problematic. But I think you make a few really good points there, if you don't mind me touching on. When the example of having 10 people in a room, this sort of got at a point that something is, it's a bit of a concern for me, is just how much presenting, we'll say, has become a performance. And maybe it's always been that way. Maybe it's just now that I'm sort of going through this process, I'm learning about it firsthand. But I would much rather that room of 10 people, and I would, honest to God, like, love to spend the first one third of the amount of time that people are expecting to be with me hearing from them. And then I understand their starting points, and we can ensure that there's all this movement forward or progression towards some central guiding factor, which we might sort of consider to be the truth. But unless I can understand their perspectives on it, as you said, I would just be relaying facts or just presenting facts, and then they will take what they want. They'll tune out as soon as that blood pressure rises. They'll go, he's so wrong on this. And the confirmation bias studies have shown this, that, and this sort of speaks to one of Martin's points, that you have two groups that are, say, again, I'll just use political terms, it might be center-left, center-right, and you present them with six pieces of information, three that are slightly supporting the right, three that are slightly supporting the left, and they actually move further apart. The same presentation of information results in people becoming further apart as opposed to closer together. And that's exactly what goes on with sort of presenting. We go, yep, this person's saying this, this, and this that I like. Cool. I'm going to shift up my assuredness on this topic. Oh, they're not saying, I don't like that they're saying. I'm actually going to crystallize my view rather than make it more open and ready to change its interpretation. And this is something why I've probably gravitated towards writing a little more than presenting. I recognize the importance of both of them, and probably it's just it's a temperamental thing as well. I can probably write to a degree that is superior to the degree that I can speak, but I find there's a more sort of immersive element to reading and learning. Like there is a massaging of someone's thoughts, and you can really be careful in not having those extremely like blood pressure spiking moments, or you can sort of signpost them if they're coming up, and just like you can give a person a chance to really just sort of soak in the information. And when I think about the things that have changed my mind, at least, it is books rather than presentations, for the most part. Like, there's caveats to that and everything. And now I think there is, just as much as there is a demographic of people that are presenting their knowledge as their way to sort of, I guess, shortcut to success, for lack of a better way, lack of a better term, on social media, I think there is a portion of the people that come to or that go to educational workshops and they just want to have basically facts spat at them. Like so many times, like, I guess I've felt pressure to sort of get on with it, just like get on with the presentation. Don't like, I'm not here for you to ask me. I want you, just like, you're here to tell me the facts. And I think this actually sort of, this ties into, we might be able to loop this back to our conversation about learning and things like this, is because theory of learning that I've come across is constructivism, and I forget, maybe the other one is basically just instructivism, but I think instructivism is effectively the teacher or the tutor or whatever has a cup full of knowledge, and their job is to pour it into the cups of others. But that's really not, in my understanding and conception of it, how knowledge transmission works. It's like you actually need to construct knowledge for yourself. Okay. You can have sort of, the teacher is more of a foreman. They're just like, oh, you see how you're hammering, you know, that nail into that board over there. That's not actually going to get you the result that you want. Maybe check this thing over here and maybe bring the spirit level across with you. And then you might actually begin to sort of see the progress that you're seeing. Or yeah, what you're doing here, you're hammering a nail into a brick. That's what not what nails are for. Like that's kind of the role of what a teacher should play. I think knowledge needs to be a much, much, much more hands-on practice than people realize. And I guess to sort of loop this back into what I was saying before, and I'll close on this, is that is extremely obvious to me the more that I have tried to learn things outside of the specific domain that I've become somewhat of an expert in. I think I've tried to apply the principles of what I thought were the way to teach fitness-based knowledge and apply them to learning computer coding. And I'm like, these are ridiculous. What? And I've had to completely flip the way I go about things. And it's like, it's the curse of knowledge, which we speak about, Mardo. It's like, once you become an expert in something, or just more knowledgeable, not to sort of consider ourselves experts, but you actually forget what it is like to not know that thing. And I think that makes completely incompetent teachers. And I think coaches need to remember they are teachers. So even if you're not an educator, you are supposed to be teaching clients things. And if you've forgotten what it's like to not know some of the things that you're trying to teach them, then you're going to be speaking past one another pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely struggled in the past when it comes to the curse of knowledge. And I think being aware of it can really help you combat it. And I feel like over the years with my presenting, and especially recently, what I have been doing before getting into the facts, before getting into the information, is actually explaining the importance of learning the theory and the importance of science, just to try and get everyone on the same page. Because like you said, Lyndon, it'd be great if we could know the audience, it'd be great if we could speak to them before actually presenting. But in the harsh reality is that's probably never going to happen, especially now that most of our presentations are done over Zoom. It's even harder to get a grasp of the audience and where they're at. Whereas when you're presenting face-to-face, usually you have the opportunity to speak to people beforehand and establish where they're at, and that helps you tailor your presentation. So recently what I've been doing is speaking about the importance of theory beforehand, like I said, and trying to establish this objective for the topic, so whatever it is, whether it's nutrition for muscle growth or training for hypertrophy, I'm trying to establish the objective, which is usually a physiological objective that comes from science. So what I'm saying is that, you know, this is what we're after to induce the response that we want. And there's probably more than one ways that we can get to that objective. But today I'm going to be speaking about, you know, a way that I believe to be based on, you know, current scientific consensus, you know, one of the better ways to do it. However, you know, there may be other ways that you could get to that objective. And along as the presentation goes by, I make it clear that, you know, there is evidence for both sides in many cases to whatever I'm trying to convey, and that, you know, going out and potentially doing your own research on this topic can further help establish and reinforce your learning. So that's where I'm kind of taking my presenting now. So you know, I'm showing you guys what has worked for myself and my clients, and what I have, you know, gathered from the current literature. But there's always, you know, differing opinions and potentially other ways to go about it. And you guys, it's on the audience. It's on you guys to take what I say, take it into account, compare it with other things that you've heard and learned and whatnot, and then try and come to your own conclusion about the best strategy in a particular situation, generally with a specific client, because obviously when you're working with different clients, usually in all cases, really the strategy would have to be molded into that particular client. And like you said earlier, Austin, clients sometimes come from, you know, different backgrounds. They usually come with their own personal truths, and sometimes it's hard to get a client to adhere to the strategy that you're implementing with them, because they haven't really bought into it. And it's hard to buy into something if within you believe something else. And over time, what I found myself doing with many of these clients is kind of explaining again the importance of science and where I'm getting my information from, but then also, you know, my experience and how I have integrated the science with my experience in the past to come to certain conclusions about how I should approach training and nutrition with clients. And I feel like explaining that to these people who struggle to adhere because of these issues, because they don't really believe in what you're telling them to do, even though they're paying you for advice, which is quite ironic, but it's still actually quite common, and I've experienced it many times before. Usually these people struggle to understand that what I'm trying to do is provide them with a strategy that is as close to what I think is objectively true. Although we don't know, although in the fitness industry, you know, objective truths very, very limited, you know. Like, explaining that concept to clients, I feel, can still sometimes help. Like, you know, you think this is true based on whatever you've been exposed to in the past. And usually I try and dig into that a little, speak about where they've gotten their information from, like you said, Austin, why they have come to this conclusion, and then explain how I'm trying to come to a conclusion about this same topic, and explain how I'm trying to get closer to what, what is objectively true, even though we may not actually know that yet. So that's just a little bit about how I've kind of transformed my strategies when it comes to knowledge transmission over recent years, because like I said, at one point I did suffer from the curse of knowledge, because I kind of just disregarded what people, knew, what they kind of believed in, and I was just hammering in, like Lyndon said, like just trying to pour knowledge from my head, pour into their brain. And then I started to come to the realization that, hold on a second, there's probably better ways of going about this.
Yeah, it was something that I despised for a long time. I don't know if that's the best word for it, but I saw it as a deep insecurity about my own abilities. And I've never been someone who's been very good at the facts and the figures. The recall, it could be one too many head injuries, but I'll blame it on that. But the recall of those facts and those figures and those exact fine things, I was just never really good at doing that. And so I was almost cornered into, I guess I'll just kind of understand the general gist of it. And we're lucky enough to live in a world where I can always just kind of go back and I can look that up, And so, that was something that I was kind of forced into that seemed to just help. That I was very fortunate that it helped, because something I saw as a deep insecurity was something that ended up really helping me in furthering my career and, putting me in some places that I never, ever expected to be, because I think where we all kind of start to get lost into those fine points, those fine details, it's so, so important to understand the theory. And I love that you brought up where you start your presentations. And I actually started watching the muscle biology presentation on your portal. I love to consume other people's, especially people that I respect, as far as the way they articulate information and new approaches. So it was a no-brainer to join you guys' portal. As I'm starting to dive, re-dive into all this stuff that I've kind of spent time away from for so long to work on a project that I'm working on. And so I've had to re-dive into all these topics, So not being a facts and figures guy, it's been very hard for me to recall all those little things that I have to kind of really touch on. It's been a blessing for me, honestly, because I've had to then dive back into things that I already learned and thought I already knew in general. And it's not that I didn't know them. And it's as I re-dive back into them, it's the process of, again, understanding the general consensus of, I know generally what's happening here. Like, I get the tension leads to this. I get that we get the mechanotransduction response. I get that leads to that. I got it. Like, we got to create tension here. Let me show you how to do that in exercise. And like, that got me along. And until I had to then write more in depth on it. And then I started to really think about it. And I had to write a section on the process of mechanotransduction. And I'm like, I don't know as much as I thought I knew about this. And I don't know if I ever thought I knew a lot about it, but damn, I gotta dive into the mechanisms. I gotta dive into all this stuff. And it's been a blessing, honestly. And I feel this new sense of almost this new sense of confidence, which is funny to kind of say, but it's not funny to say. I guess it's And that maybe that's an ego thing coming out there of like, you think you're further along than you are, and then you are very humbled by what you don't know. And I feel like that's kind of almost like a phase that I'm in currently. You know, you're put into these places and then you're like, well, yeah, I know this and this, and like, I know generally what that's about. And you know, I think it's important to always remember that we're all very limited in a lot of different ways. And you have two, you know, there's a giant continuum here that I kind of think about, but one is that importance of facts and figures. It's importance of understanding exactly what is going on. And then it's the importance of the theory alongside that, or we could put that in an opposite order, right? Understanding the theory of the general consensus of what's happening, and then understanding the facts and the figures. But you cannot leave out what I think is one of the most important components for a coach, and that's the experience. And I think one of the most important things, and I've given this advice to many people, but one of the most important things that I've ever experienced in my life was traveling. It put me into many different circumstances. I'll say some were very uncomfortable and forced me to grow and adapt. And those were typically the ones where I was in a, let's say I remember a certain instance where we were leaving Dachau concentration camp, and we had to make a flight, and we had to get to the airport, and like, we had the exact amount of time we had to get to the airport to get back to the university so we could take an exam the next day. So we had to catch our flight. We're in this situation. We don't speak German. There's no one around that speaks any English, and we have to find a train to get us to then connect to a different train to get to the airport. And it's like, you find me and my great buddy were in this situation alone. No cell service, no phones, no train. Like, just, we looked at each other and we're like, man, we got to figure this out. And there's certain mechanisms, that kind of series of events that sort of unfold in your mind of, once you get past that general, like, okay, let's not freak out moment, because that's not going to help anything. How do we trace this back? Like, what's the first step? What's the first way to then get to that goal? And I feel like that's something in those moments, months on end, as I was traveling, that was like kind of the start of my big travels. I had the fortunate opportunity to spend 4 months basically just traveling and going to school. And I mean, just in and out of different countries every week. And it was like the coolest thing that could have ever happened to me. And I think it's really played into my professional career. And my professional ability to speak to different people, to speak to different cultures of people, because we all, you know, if you're online, for the most part, you're going to probably interact with different cultures. You're going to have to interact with people understanding things from a different perspective. But even if you don't have to do that, it's important that you spend time. And I think for me, that travel was all spent away from the fitness industry. 4 months, I think 12 countries, none of it had to do with the fitness industry. And it was probably one of the coolest experiences of my life. I met my wife there, which made it way better. But in all of that time, you know, after spending this was like going into my last semester of undergrad. So, right, I've basically spent all of undergrad head deep in textbooks. And then I basically run away from that life, run away from that, all of it. This was sort of a make or break moment for me. I was actually like, was going to drop out of college at this point, because I was fed up with a lot of things that were going on in my life, and I wanted to run away. And I kind of like gave myself the ultimatum, like, study abroad, take the semester, just go experience. Create memory, create experience outside of your normal life, like create experience outside of this. And it's really crazy. I thought about, this is kind of top of mind, because I thought about it the other day, just how kind of where things have sort of unfolded for me. And it all goes back to me taking this trip, because I was dropping out of college. Like, I was setting up plans. Like, I'll work as a trainer at the gym. I'll do this. Like, it'll be fine. And there's no telling where my life would be at this point, you know? I definitely wouldn't be on the path I'm on. I could say that, right? And to be very fortunate to be on this path. But it all turns back to taking yourself out, get experience. Understand, it's, you know, it can be experience within different niches of your space. But I think it's important, as Lyndon was bringing up, learn skills outside your trade, get experience outside your trade, and learn how to make lateral connections. As Martin used the term, kind of synchronize those experiences, synchronize that knowledge with those experiences. And it's kind of silly that this needs to be said, but you got to become a person. You got to become in art context, you got to become a man. You got to become a responsible person. You got to become a valuable person within our community, within your community. You got to become a valuable person in general to those around you. And that extends way past knowing about protein metabolism or knowing about, these are just small bits and pieces of our lives that seemingly in our heads take up the most amount of space, at least in terms of thought on average, I would say, at least for me most of the time. But they make up so little of our lives, really. When you think about your day-to-day, like the importance of who you are in your life and your community and those around you. And I just, again, like most of us, like who knows where this even started to spark a thought in my brain, but I think it's important to round this all out and to whether you're looking to be a coach, whether you're looking to get into this or just learn more about it, or you're looking to become an educator or someone that, you know, gains respect of others for a piece of knowledge or for knowledge gained. Like, it's incredibly, incredibly important to understand that it extends beyond. And I think those who I've at least met along this journey are people that, you know, they're people. You meet them and it's like, he was honestly just a really cool dude. You know, beyond being someone that I look up to or, you know, someone that has a lot of knowledge in the space, like those people generally tend to be like, they were a cool person. That was a cool chick. That was a cool dude. Like, I think we'd be, you know, we're friends regardless. You know, we just happen to do this thing with our life. You know, this is our vehicle to the world. This is our way to transmit wisdom. And hopefully it can spread some wisdom, you know, instill some values in someone's life that transfer over. You know, the discipline gained from tracking macros may seem minuscule, but fuck if we all don't have carryover from that small discipline in our everyday life, right? Or going through a dieting phase or a contest prep, or, I mean, we see it. We've experienced it. We've seen it. And these little things matter. And becoming a person, I think, is invaluable. And I want to pose a question after my soapbox there. I want to pose a question to both of you. Hey guys, Austin here. Thank you again for listening into the episode. It means a lot. If you can, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave the podcast a 5-star review. This does help us grow and be found by others. Also, just wanted to mention, if you guys are interested in free education based around training and nutrition, be sure to check out physiquedevelopment.com/free education, where you will find free downloads, videos, articles, etc. No strings attached. Again, thank you. Chat soon.